guys, the way you handle every week to me is just absolutely amazing. It's special, man, and you guys do it every single week. Every week's different, and you guys handle it, and you grow together. We do it together, everybody, man. It's the best, and it feels so good.
This is the Full Press Bears Podcast, a part of Full Press Coverage. Here's your host and diehard Chicago Bears fan, Kyle George.
You are ridiculous.
Get ready to bear down.
Thank you, thank you, and go Bears!
What's up, Bears fans? It's your host, Kyle George, and this show is about the Bears all the time. You can follow me on Twitter at FuriousGeorge94. And, you know, if you like cynicism, especially after that game, you should go check out my Twitter and enjoy some of the humor there. But for more news on the Bears, if you feel so inclined to read about it, you should read our coverage at Full Press Bears on Twitter. Email me, FullPressBears@gmail.com. Call and leave a voicemail, 847-580-3528. I'd love to hear from you from either email or phone, or leave me a review on your favorite podcast service. I'd love to hear from you there. This podcast, as always, can be heard on any of your popular podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, etc., or more simply, go to fullpresscoverage.com or download the Full Press Coverage app and find this podcast and many other great ones there. Wherever you do go, please be sure to hit that subscribe button. Joey is with me again this evening talking about this Bears-Packers game. Thank you for joining us, or me.
Yep. Is that what we're talking about? I was hoping we officially became a Chicago Sky podcast or maybe just a Chicago basketball podcast to cover the Bulls tipping off tonight.
But yeah.
You know, I guess if I have to snap back to reality, fair enough.
Here's the good and the bad news about that. The good news would be that, one, obviously the Sky won the championship. Congrats to them. And the Bulls look to be much improved this year. That's the good news. The bad news is that you would have way more games that we would have to do these podcasts about. And we already have enough trouble scheduling time for us to do 17 Bears games. So
very good point. Just
in terms of time commitment, I would love to cover the Bulls like on the regular, but I just the time commit if podcasting was a full-time job, then I would be able to do it, but yeah. it currently is not, and so it's not in the cards right now.
Yeah, more than fair.
But speaking of things not being in the cards, it was not in the cards for this game, and I'm very curious to see. I'm gonna throw this, like most of this conversation, over to you here in a minute, because you texted me earlier today and you said something along the lines that you're very, what was the word you used? You're very amped up about the game. And I responded and said, I'm kind of in a state of malaise. Like, I don't have much to say about this game because it more or less went how I expected. It felt like almost every other Bears-Packers game that has been for most of my life. And I wasn't even really that bothered by the statement Aaron Rodgers made because I didn't, and it wasn't because I'm accepting it. I'm just like, yeah. And like, I feel like it was a meaningless statement. It doesn't really change anything. It doesn't mean anything. And all of national media is talking about it. And I just don't really think it's that big of a story. Mm-hmm. So I have very little to say about this game because it was not
over. Yeah, turn it over my way. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, let's hear it from you because I have nothing interesting to say about this game.
So that's good. This will be like a little bit of a therapy session for me tonight. Like, let me just get on the couch and let it out. So I was at the game and it was a beautiful day, great football weather.
That
sun in Chicago.
True.
I mean, we were doing good, right? We got there early, had our drinks, we were good to go. the first quarter, the entire stadium had an end. And I shouldn't say the first quarter because we did not even get through the entire first quarter. But most of the first quarter, you could feel a level of energy and optimism and like just like total like rowdy liveliness from the crowd for most of that entire first quarter, up until the you know, not called free play, right? The neutral zone infraction or whatever. Which when you watch the replay, it's like that play can't go on with no flag. I mean, either we're not set and it's a false start, which isn't the case. It was, you know, and we'll get back to the officiating, but I'm telling you from that moment on, because right after that, you have the defensive stop with the Mario Edwards penalty for taunting. And like the crowd just came out of it right at that point. And it just, we never got it back from there. And like, I remembered thinking like going into the second quarter, like everyone kind of got up and it was kind of like, well, it was fun while it lasted. Like we just kind of knew right away. We started going into run down the clock mode way too early. Like we got the lead and this offense is just, as opposed to being like zero dimensional in the past, is like, well, one dimensional in that we can run the ball well, but when they get behind, it's over. Like this team has to play with a lead and maintain it. And the second that that's out the window and we have to throw out like where we can't just kind of play with a lead, run down the clock and just control things that way, we have nowhere to go. Like we are, that's the only dimension we have covered. But like you said, like to kind of back up a little bit, this is the same old story. This is nothing new. And I think our chance to change the story was in the offseason, and Nagy and company blew it by not allowing Fields to get first string reps, not tailoring the offense to his strengths or the team's strengths, you know, and instead kind of tailoring it to what Nagy wants his offense to look like and building it around Andy Dalton. Nagy's entire offense, his brand of football, is a lame variation of the Reed West Coast offense. And it relies on, you know, quick, short passes in place of running the ball to maintain possession. And it's an offense that theoretically should work pretty well for Andy Dalton or like presumably Nick Foles, although it didn't. But it's not in his identity to commit to running the ball. Yep. And we're still stumbling our way through embracing that identity because it just – the one thing that actually fits his personnel and this team's ability does not line up with who he is and what his identity is. And for years now, we just have seen on top of that he hasn't schemed receivers open downfield. And it's like – this, our chance to rewrite the story has kind of, it's like now we're just going to go through this season with the sort of definition of insanity and knowing what we're signing up for. And that's sort of just my opening. Yep.
Yeah. I'd like to chime in mainly because of the receivers thing you brought up, because that was one of my main points on this was last week when MJ Hurley was on, he was pointing out how where the Packers are suffering the most right now in terms of injuries is their offensive line, but also their secondary and the fact that their secondary were missing Jaire Alexander and Kevin King was out. And so you had Stokes really as CB1, which, you know, I know they have a lot of upside and they're excited about him, but you probably don't want him as your number one corner this early into his rookie year. He's not Patrick Surtain. And yet, despite these secondary concerns, a lot of Bears pundits have been astute to point out that there was very little separation provided by these receivers. And people have pointed out, why is Fields holding onto the ball so long? Why does he hold onto the ball so long? And yes, he should throw the ball away more. He should run or make the decision to run a little earlier than what he does to avoid those sacks. But he's probably holding onto the ball longer because there's not separation from these receivers. And this goes to both Matt Nagy's scheme as well as Ryan Pace's evaluation of players, in my opinion, because so one, starting with scheme, why I feel like Damir Bird's name was talked about all preseason.
Exactly.
And I don't. Has he even made a catch this year or a target? Like
I have it in my notes. I have this exact note. Is I don't trust this offensive coaching staff to evaluate the talent on the roster. I don't trust what I see when they put Damir Bird out there to run block. Like and or do anything. It mm-hmm. doesn't make sense. And that was who they hyped up all off season. So I don't trust their evaluation.
So Damir Bird and Marquise Goodwin, everyone was like, oh, they're super fast. Well, if they're super fast and so is Darnell Mooney, there should be some distinct separation. And with Fields, we know that he has a high QBR of throwing the ball 20 plus yards down the field. If I'm just being logical here, if I'm the coach, Khalil Herbert was running the ball well to start the game. Give him, you know, establish the run in the first couple sets of downs, and then take a shot and take a shot at Goodwin or Bird or Mooney. Have them stretch the field, go vertical, and throw there. Or even if they wanted to do a slant route through the middle with one of those speedy guys, that's what you should be doing. But there was very little of that. And the question is one, was Nagy not scheming these plays for these guys? Was he not using Goodwin and Bird in these speedster type roles that he should be? And the second concern here, I mentioned Ryan Pace, is Ryan Pace, he signed these guys and had this emphasis on speed, but maybe these guys just aren't actually that good. Mm-hmm. And they were signed, and everyone was pretty excited. They were like, Damir Bird had 600 yards last year. Marquise Goodwin had that one really good year with the Niners, and he's an Olympic athlete, and like he's super fast. Like, people had these reasons to be excited, and Pace signed these guys, but maybe they're not actually good.
Yep. We know if they're going to serve us Kool-Aid, we're going to drink it, right? It's their responsibility to the what they're putting out there has to be accurate. We can't evaluate. I mean, I think to even your point, Marquise Goodwin, the one time that they did take a deep shot, at least it was in the first quarter, and they drew a pass interference, and it set up the 1 yard Khalil Herbert touchdown run. And it was validation right at the start of the game that works. And it's what Marquise Goodwin was begging for since week one against the Rams, where he said, don't put me on a short curl route against Jalen Ramsey. That's playing to his strengths. Like, if there's one thing I am, it's quick. So just send me on a go route and good things will happen because Fields has the deep ball accuracy. So You're so right, and it's not even speculating. It's true. We saw it. Yeah. Like, everyone saw it work, and then that was it. Didn't see it again.
And that and the free play, both of those things, when executed properly, like, so chucking it downfield, playing for the PI, and the free play, those two things are what elite quarterbacks and elite offenses do. And those two things are nobody ever remembers those plays, but they are some of the biggest chunk yards you can get in a game, because either on the big play free play, you chuck it downfield and you get a bigger completion than you expected, and or a PI, and the PI, you obviously just get all this yard. Like,
yeah. That's how drives are sustained in the modern NFL, and that's why the Bears never have sustained drives.
Yep. There should be a lot of concern from Bears fans about that, and I'm not a film guy. I don't go back and, you know, props to those of you who go back and rewatch games and everything. I'm not that dedicated, or I just don't have the time, or it's a little bit of both, but especially Bears losses, I don't usually feel that excited to go back and rewatch those. But from a lot of people that have been watching, they've been saying, oh, it looks like on a lot of these scrambled plays that Allen Robinson just stopped running. And these receivers just stopped running their routes and they stopped. And when on a scramble play, you should either be running downfield further or be coming back to the quarterback open. What are these guys doing then? And that brings the question back to the coaching. So it should not be hard for you to coach to your players those two things. On a scramble play, after you've run your route, if you don't have the ball, come back to the quarterback, or keep going and juke out a guy and try to get open downfield more. Like, make it seems like such a stupid, simple thing to me, and yet they still struggle with it. Mm-hmm. And so my eyes turn to Mike Furry at times, and I'm just like,
yeah,
when have we? I know that we haven't had like these crazy talented top 10 wide receivers, really, but Allen Robinson argues that he is one, but yet he's one of the ones making mistakes. He's having a very down year so far. Okay. And you look at the success of Darnell Mooney so far, it's like, is that really a credit to Mike Furry or really a credit to Ryan Pace?
He came in with that talent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, who has Mike Furry developed and seen get back? I mean, we've seen Anthony Miller, the opposite, Javon Wims, the opposite. They, you right. know, and
Riley Ridley can't get on the field.
Right. Riley Ridley, no. And then you have Newt, you have this kind of cycle of guys that have come in and out of the team and have not stuck around. I haven't seen Mike Furry develop, and it's not even a. Again, Mike Furry, I believe, was hired by Nagy, and they're old teammates from the Arena League and their buddies. And it's just like, yeah, but where's the accountability? Like, yep. your receiver room is letting you down. So how is it that, you know, Harry Hiestand's losing his job, and no, you know, Fury's not the problem here. I haven't seen anyone develop or get better under him.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think what we're uncovering in this conversation is that just the problem continues to be the same common denominator, which is Matt Nagy, and every now and then a flare of Ryan Pace. And honestly, part of the reason I think Ryan Pace is always brought up is because he hired Nagy. And so right. if Nagy is stinking it up, that's a reflection of Pace's evaluation, whether you think that's entirely fair or not. And here's what I'll say about that real quick. I've seen a lot of Bears Twitter all of a sudden, like, frankly, being way more supportive of Ryan Pace than they have in a long time. And it's amazing to me how Justin Fields has basically completely reversed people's opinions of Ryan Pace. Just a single draft pick has done that for him. And based on just public opinion, I think Pace is going to get a shot to hire another head coach after Nagy. I think Pace will outlive Nagy, which frankly will be ridiculous when you look at Pace's overall win-loss record, his postseason record. It's not good. And so I don't personally even know what to think anymore, because I was down on him for a while. I was obviously excited about Fields, and I give him credit for certain things like the late round picks, but his early round picks have been so abysmal. It's like you're missing, like you're really good at finding the depth pieces, but you're not good at finding the star pieces, the key mm-hmm. starting role pieces that we need. And even his free agent acquisitions have been questionable. I just don't know where I stand with Pace. I see the good, I see the bad. I don't know if I want him to pick another head coach.
Yeah, no, I get it. And my frustration, or I want someone overseeing it, right? Or have it, you know, or who we talked about, like, for not seriously, but Olin Krutz being that like VP of football operations, where you feel like there's some checks and balances in this whole system. But I agree with you. And it's, I'll say this to kind of, it's not in defense of Ryan Pace, but it's just, I'm trying to assign the blame where it belongs in this particular failure. Like leading up to this game, I don't think that Matt Nagy had a clue the talent that he had in Khalil Herbert. I mean, yes, he came off like a good game when sharing the reps with Damian Williams, but I really don't think there was a reporter who asked Nagy directly about this leading up to the game, which said like, is Khalil Herbert ready? How do you feel about it? And Nagy was kind of like, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. And it wasn't like tongue in cheek. Like he knew something he didn't. He was like, we don't really have any other choice here, so he's going to have to be. It was not with confidence. And the same, like, it's trial and error. There's no ability to evaluate talent. You know, Ryan Pace is the one who brought in Khalil Herbert, but he can't put him on the field.
Yep.
You know, Sam Mustafa, they kind of stumble upon him, and it's like, I don't trust Nagy or his coaching staff to put the right personnel on the field and know who they have. And it's like, at this point, like, put Rodney Adams out there. You know, if we're going to see Khalil Herbert be used more moving forward with David Montgomery, I think that's great. But we ask back our way into these things and just kind of stumble upon them. It's never like proactive or part of a plan.
By the way, on that note with running backs, if I'm the Bears, I actually would keep Monty and Williams as R2. Monty RB1, Williams RB2. As good as Herbert has been, simply for the fact of holding on, giving, like, the NBA started tonight, the whole idea of load management and whatever, like, managing Herbert's activity, because the dude looks like he could be good, and I don't want to say one way or another if the Bears should move on from David Montgomery, but hopefully, ideally, year two of Justin Fields can be a serious competition year, and having the 1-2 punch of Monty and a healthy Herbert would be good, because Monty's been struggling with some injuries the past couple of years, and if you overuse Herbert, now you could have some concern there. He clearly shows he's got some stuff. Anyway, my point is...
No, I like that.
Yeah, I would hold on to him because I don't think you need him to be RB2 this year.
Right. No, I agree. I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think you need to... I think that's kind of how David Montgomery's career started a little bit too. Yep. So I would like to kind of continue following that footsteps. And going back to on Nagy, I don't know if you said, like, his post-game press conference was a repeat of every press conference he's done. And, like, how he can honestly still use the phrase, the wise, unironically, is, like, painful. It's like, it's not even he can't even make fun of himself about it. If he was at least, like, the where we're at, like, if he would at least laugh at himself about it now. But it's, like, he's still using that unironically. Like, dude, it is over. Like,
when Jason Leisure tweeted out that he said – we need to figure out and understand the whys. I actually thought he was joking at first.
Because that's where we all are. That's where you should be. Yeah. And he's like, this dude has no awareness. He's not normal. He's not a fun coach. Can you imagine how dreadful he would be? Like, if the Bears were on Hard Knocks, like, he's a robot. He does, like, awkward interviews only with, like, Jeff Joniak and Lawrence Creed. And, like, they're, like, corporate sponsored. He doesn't have a fun bone. He would be, you look around the league at all these coaches that go on, like, Part of My Take, for example. And they have, like, a personality. They're lively. They're engaging. Like, imagine Matt Nagy. He's not a football guy. He's like this creepy spokesperson for McDonald's. And, like, I see, you know, and, like, I get these, what is it? Why is this where I'm watching? Like, this is where he's coming into my life outside of, like, it's like for these McDonald's ads. And, like, and he has a way of drawing fans back in because of the locker room culture and these, you know, the boom and this. And we've talked about that in the past. And it's like, you're going to, Bears fans are supposed, like, our standards are so low. Like, you give us the bare minimum, like, we're going to get over it. But, like, at some point we need to rip the Band-Aid off and do what's best for Fields long term. Like, I can't just be sucked back in after we have a promising win or an upset against the Raiders. Like, I can't do that.
And here's what I'd say in terms of the possibility of Nagy keeping his job while developing Fields. The only way I see that working is if Nagy was willing to hire a offensive coordinator that possibly entirely could be opposite from him or disagree with him. If Nagy accepted the role 100% fully as head coach and relegated all other duties to these other coaches, that's the only way I see him really surviving. And I just don't know. I don't even know who that would be that they would hire. And I kind of question Nagy's ability to evaluate. I was really excited about Mike Helfrich from a few years ago.
Mark Helfrich, yeah.
He was one of the scapegoats for Trubisky's lack of development. So he was gone.
Him and Harry Heastand.
And I don't even know where I stand with, like, the whole Brian Daboll thing. I know everyone's like, oh, Brian Daboll's who the Bears should go after. I just don't know. I'm one of those guys. I would much rather see them go get someone like a Todd Bowles and, like, just I'd love to see him get Todd Bowles and let Todd Bowles hire his guy to be offensive coordinator. I just don't know that I guess as a Bears fan, we've had enough coaches that are supposed to be offensively minded.
Right.
And the last two that we've had like that were Trestman and Nagy, and both have major gripes that we've had with them. So I feel like I'm kind of scarred from that.
I mean, we know that the Bears aren't going to fire him midseason as much as it would be, what's best for Justin's development so that he can stop with these bad habits and all this other. But I think other dominoes will fall at the end of the season. And so, like, speculating, because realistically, we're going to be riding this season out with Nagy. Yep. And so what you do from there, it's like, all right, let's evaluate then. But I think it's very telling the way that Fields gives a shout out to Bill Lazor, and that he said, like, yeah, Bill called a great game. You know, Fields has been, like, not critical of Nagy, but not exactly like a ringing endorsement. I mean, he's had answers that have been like, well, I don't really have a choice. I have to trust my coaching staff, which is like, that's not exactly, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but like, it was an opportunity for him to like praise Matt Nagy. And it was more of like, I don't really have a choice. I have to go along with what he's saying. There was, I think if you saw from last, like there was a video clip of Nagy kind of like hugging and talking to Justin on the sideline, I think during the Raiders game. And like, you just see Justin's, he was just like, yeah, no, all right, I'm good. Like, he just wanted nothing to do with him. And like, we never know what's actually being said, but right. I've heard Fields give props and shout and saying that he likes Bill Lazor's like calm voice and the commitment to the run game. And I have not heard much credit out to Nagy. And it's just added to my list of like, players who I feel like who are giving these sort of like cryptic signs of like, hey, how, you know, I can't directly say it, but yeah, like this guy is the problem.
Yeah. And it's interesting because Nagy has stated that he's like good friends with Ryan Day, and you would think maybe there'd be a little more reverence there maybe for Nagy, just out of respect for his former coach and Ryan Day, now his current coach, Matt Nagy. They have a relationship. I don't know. I think it's a good point for sure to bring up. These Bears Packers games are always such an indictment on where the Bears are. And they always make, I think, all of us Bears fans kind of go crazy with every aspect of the team and reevaluate. And what hurts the most, I think, to me is not even so much losing to the Packers, but I think what hurts the most to me is that the rivalry feels so one-sided. It feels very much like we hate the Packers, but I think Packers fans, they enjoy seeing the Bears lose, but it's not like it's a life or death thing. For me, and I think most Bears fans, it's like, you know, I would sacrifice my right arm if it meant that the Bears could beat the Packers just once. Yeah. You know, like, we're very serious about it, and I think we have such a loathing for them. And I think that's what hurts the most. It's not even the fact that they beat us all the time. It's the fact that it's kind of one-sided, and people... Yep. Yeah.
I want to see that, like... I think Akeem Hicks played through, I think he kind of rushed back onto the field through his groin injury. And like the fan, I think this rivalry is for the fans and for all, like that's fair. But it's not even that I want Bears to consistently be able to like, okay, we need to flip the script and be 22-5 over the Packers moving forward. It's just, I want to see that same level, like the heart and the pride that someone like Akeem Hicks shows, like from the players and from the coaching staff, like in that moment in time that like, it's so rare that we see it, and it shouldn't be.
And why should the players be so invested in it when the team isn't even equipped with what it needs to be able to compete with this team? Like, and that's why all the Aaron Rodgers, the comments with ONU, like, they just didn't hit me very much, because it's just like, yeah, so like, I don't know.
It hit me because, no, I'm with you. I get it. And it didn't hit me the way it hit a lot of other people. A lot of people took it as like, how can he say that? Like, dude, this is like, relax, right? Like, he can say whatever the fuck he wants, and he isn't wrong. I've seen that. Like, he's not wrong. Yep. But I'm going to add this. I have seen way too much props and acceptance from Bears fan. Like, and I just need to course correct a little bit in my, like, first of all, Rodgers doesn't own the Bears, at least not in this game, right? Like, this wasn't some heroic Rodgers performance of his.
No, not at
he
all.
Struggled against the defense for the majority of the game. And he, like, to a group of fans, he's screaming, making it about him, that he's – it's like, dude, you didn't single – you had all of these games, you have not single-handedly won. You're a shitty teammate. Frankly,
most Bears-Packers games, Rodgers is not – okay, I would argue, and any Packers fan that would like to – you know, fight me on this is welcome to come on this podcast, but I would venture to say, just from based on things off my memory, that most Bears losses to the Packers are frankly self-inflicted.
Like, always. This was a perfect example of it, but that's always how it is.
Like Roger, the games, there are not many performances that Rodgers has done against the Bears where it's like, that is the GOAT. That is the Super Bowl, you know, the guy who should be in the Super Bowl every year. That is this guy who's competing with Brady. We haven't seen, like, going back to the NFC Championship game, he had a horrible QBR that day. He had, like, one touchdown pass and two interceptions, something bad. You had this game, collarbone game. He wasn't even in it. Like, I would say the most heroic performance I can remember of Aaron Rodgers was the 2018 opener, when Bears go up 20-7 at one point or whatever, and the Packers end up winning 24-20, whatever the score was that game, where he brought them all back in the second half. Like, that was a heroic Rodgers performance. But most of these games, he's been, I guess I'd give him above average, but yeah.
We lose basic, you know, missed tackles by safeties, blown coverages and miscommunications in the secondaries. We don't lose the games because of the officiating, but let's not act like come on. The refs are always, you go back and look every time it's a lot of self-inflicted wounds and it's a lot from the officials. And then in this game was no exception. And look, I'm sure I'm coming across as salty and it sounds like I'm all upset that like Rodgers made his little save. No, I legitimately love that. And if to me, it's like, okay, cool. So he does care about this rivalry. We did get under his skin a little bit. Like he was doing all like the buttering us up and nice talk and giving props to Chicago all week and being Mr. Nice Guy. It's like, he's just as like, he thinks he's some like, kumbaya hippie dude. It's like, dude, he's just as much of as like that, you know what I mean, as sleazy, yeah, like pompous asshole as we think he is. And at least Bears fans that are going to flip him off will stand by it. Like, yep, we might not be able to punch back after, like, yeah, they got the win, but at least we're not going to be, you know what I mean, it's like, then don't bow to him, you know. At you could just at least leave feeling proud that you gave him the middle finger. Like,
I think it was on 670 The Score earlier this week, I heard them say that Aaron Rodgers is like the, like, Bears fans like Aaron Rodgers. And the way they said it was, it's not that they like him because obviously he beats them all the time, but it's because he beats them all the time, they like him because he is the perfect villain. He is the ultimate antithesis of the Bears. And for like... just to go into like a historical comparison, when you look at the history of warfare in America, World War II is often glorified so much because it was so very clear and obvious to everybody that Nazi Germany was the enemy. And a lot, then, you know, as time went on with Vietnam and other things, the enemy, quote unquote, got very muddied as to who was really the bad guy. With this situation, it's like Rodgers, and I don't want to say he's Nazi, but in the comparison I'm offering, he is Nazi Germany to America, where it is blatantly obvious that he is the villain. And I think that's largely because he is the one common denominator that has torched the Bears since his beginning, as opposed to someone like Devontae Adams or Aaron Jones, who's been part of the Packers for a few years. Like, they're not as entrenched in this as Rodgers is. So yeah, I don't blame him. I like your approach of saying, hey, at least it means we get under his skin a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was at the point where I was like, I guess I kind of don't care, because I'm just like, one, It doesn't mean anything. It's out, like it's a non-literal statement, and it doesn't mean anything. And he's probably not going to play for the Packers next year anyway. Mm-hmm. And so
but the reason, like him having that, it's like, did Packers fans just forget about like this whole, all the drama and this diva and like the drama queen that he is, like him and his gross haircut and all the stuff that like his old teammate, like Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley have been telling us for years, like this dude is a shitty teammate. You don't get a reputation like that from thin air. And I'm saying all of this in respect. It's like, hey, he's talking shit. Like if I were out on that field, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not out there playing football, but I'm not going to roll over and take it. And I don't really mind. Like, to me, that's fun. Like, this is competition. This is football. And like, that's just like, this is bulletin board material for when we play them. And I want to see, like, I see Justin Fields getting tackled on the Green Bay sideline, like on the bench. No one on the offense hustles over to help him up. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, no one's shoved. I mean, the Packers were like parading around him. It's like, it was as much of a taunting as taunting is in today's NFL. And I don't understand, like, and it goes back to the coaching and the offensive identity. It's like they just are soft, and it's what Chris Long said.
You know,
and
there's that,
no heart, nothing.
That point is exactly why. Now, it's interesting you bring up coaching, because my first thought is actually more the scouting, where I fall in line with this. Like, it's interesting, and I think it exposes the problem in both scenarios when we talk about the Bears being soft. I never it's so ingrained in my mind because Hogan Johns referred to it all the time. The discussion that Chris Long had with his brother Kyle Long after the Eagles beat the Bears after the double doink, how he just said, you guys are not a physical enough team to really make a run for a Super Bowl. And physicality in the NFL obviously is paramount. And so you're saying it's due to the coaching, which I agree with, but I also feel like it's due to the scouting and who the people are that Brian Pace is bringing to the building.
Yeah, it's a lot of yes men that want to get paid.
And I've said this on here. I've said this on Frustration Nation. The Bears organization, top to bottom, is filled with quote-unquote nice guys. And it is great in most business scenarios to have nice guys, because you want to have good soldiers, people who have interesting thoughts to bring to the table, people who can quote unquote collaborate well, and you know, can put on a good image for the company. But in this company, this business, where it is entirely 100% based upon your season by season results, and the results are not there, at some point I don't want Mr. Nicey Nice anymore. I want somebody, I don't care if they are a jerk. I want somebody who means business and who knows that he's there to win. I don't know. The Bears.
Yes. That's why Mike Ditka is just part of like the lore of Chicago fans. And it's not just like an old, like 85 meathead Bears fan. Like it's not even a joke. It's like,
well, think about George Halas too, and the way he coached. Like,
yeah, that's why Vic Fangio was so endeared by this team. Cause it was just like, there's no time for this shit. Like he was just, I care about results.
Yep. So yeah,
there's too much of that.
With all this 3-3, I don't really see at this point a great reason to be calling for Matt Nagy's job, as there was after the Cleveland Browns debacle. 3-3 is more or less what a lot of people had the Bears chalked up to at this point in the season. Some people even had them losing to the Raiders to make them 2-4. So by some people's predictions, Bears are actually better than what people expected. And, you know, they have Tampa coming up. Very, very, very tough game. Strangely feels like a trap game to me, sort of, for Tampa. Just because they're coming off of a bye week. Or no, not a bye week. They played Thursday night, so they have a longer rest period. And they're clearly better than the Bears, but feels sort of trap game-ish to me for them. So not sure, you know, I'm going to probably pick Tampa to win, but I think there's a door for the Bears to win. But the point is, at this point, I don't see Nagy losing his job until the season's over. He's 500 right now. They have a tough schedule. If he ends the season 8-9 or 9-8, whether he makes the playoffs or not, I think, you know, I kind of wonder where he'll be for next year. But Ted Phillips has said that they're happy with 500. You know, that's more or less what they said in that press conference in January. We are obviously not. I just don't know where this goes from here, and I don't know what coaches will be available. Obviously, there's already an opening in Las Vegas. There's probably going to be openings other places. People have talked about the Giants. People have talked about the Broncos. People have talked about Urban Meyer and Jacksonville. Who knows who will be left? But I don't. If you're somebody listening to this hoping that Nagy will be fired soon, it's not going to happen, especially now that they're 500.
No, you're right. I just want it to be known that here's my case for it. Dead last in yards per game, and I'm pulling up the stats on ESPN now. 246 yards per game, total offensive yards per game, dead last at 246. Dead last in yards per play. Dead last in pass yards per game, dead last in yards per play, dead last in sacks allowed per pass. Our third down efficiency is 28th. Our points per game is 30th. The only thing that we have going for us offensively is the run game in our red zone efficiency, 7th in rushing yards per game. And that's in spite of Matt Nagy, not because of him. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I don't think that we know that the Bears culture is not going to be to fire a head coach midseason. I think more than anything, why you have so much of this discussion and just discomfort, like Bears fans just want to feel like this team has sort of a plan. Like, I think we just want to feel, and that's where so much of the Justin Fields like embrace came from. Like, I think Bears fans want to feel assured that like this crazy roller coaster and turnover of head coaches and quarterbacks and this carousel of like this carnival that we've been on for years and decades is like, it felt like maybe some stability just, and that's what we're envious. It's not winning. It's not Super Bowls. Like, it's Bears fans just want stability. Like, I think that's what we're really like hoping for is continuity. And I think like, to me, I think back to this, like Packers or even like to all of these seasons and all of these tough losses. And I think most Bears fans would welcome a game where we lose. And after that loss, what we get to talk about is like the what went wrong being a blown coverage, a missed tackle by Eddie Jackson, a drop pass by Demir Byrd, injuries at right tackle causing problems. Like, where you could say, yeah, you know, that, oh man, we could point to a couple of these things and still walk away with the loss and feel okay. But it feels so foolish to analyze and scrutinize those little things when the bigger picture is a dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. And if there's a dumpster on fire, like, that's not the time to sort through like water bottles that were thrown in the trash instead of recycling. Like, it's a dumpster fire. So like, I'm not going to get worried about these little things.
And yeah, just to draw a comparison, like to baseball, I'm a Cubs fan. Obviously 2016 was amazing to win the World Series. But I had more fun during the 2015 season personally. And the reason for that is because all we knew was the plan was, hey, we don't know if this team is going to be good or not good, but we know the plan is that this year a lot of the young prospects we have are coming up and they're going to be able to play for the first time. And you know what? A lot of them impressed and the Cubs made it to the NLCS. That's what I want for the Bears. Like, I want for the Bears, I don't, like you said, I don't need wins. I want to have this reaction for a season to be like, doesn't really matter if they win or lose. All I want to see is the team playing to the best of their ability and to see young guys getting time to develop. And I want to see competent coaching. And if I can see those plans, I think eventually a sound, coherent plan can develop into something great. And that's what we have to hope for this team. I feel like we're at a good spot to close, but we need to real quick go through our doink and our Sunday sweetness. So real quick, my doink of the week is Eddie Jackson, and it's not even anything to do with what he did in the game. It's more of what he did after the game, which a lot of you, if you're listening to this, you're probably aware of his little Twitter feud, if you will, with Lance Briggs. And I mean, first of all, First of all, a lot of people have gripes with PFF stats anyway. Second of all, when I read that it was about Lance Briggs he was going after, I was like, okay, dude. Like, I was not as into the analytics of football during the Lance Briggs era as I am now, but I vividly remember Lance Briggs on the Bears, and I never once thought, man, Lance Briggs just missing tackles left and right. Like, oh, and these players are breaking loose down way down the field because of Lance Briggs. Like, pick somebody who's more known for tackling issues or coverage issues. Pick on someone like a Chris Conte or whatever. But like, it's kind of one of those things like in movies where bullies are like, pick on someone your own size. Like, Eddie Jackson, you do not know who you're picking a fight with. And yeah, so that was stupid. And that's why Eddie Jackson is my doink of the week.
Yep, that's a good one. My doink of the week, and this is going to sound like a cop-out, but it's not. And I'm not blaming them for the loss, but the officials. It was the turning point in the game, was the, you know, the free play with no flag. Yep. A play that should have, you know, that had to be called with an offsides, that should have been a free play. And right afterwards, the Mario Edwards taunting, like, instead of a good defensive stop. And things just kept getting worse from there. But the reason it's my one moment in the game where, like, I would wave that wand and erase it, where if the officials get all of that right, I really think the domino effect keeps, like, so much of that momentum going. And maybe we still don't get the win, but, like, it was just over after that. So I'm blaming the officials.
The Bears are so – the reason you can tell the Bears are a bad team is because they can't overcome the officials. Every team on every week deals with bad or questionable calls. And the Bears are just horrible at stopping the bleeding. Yeah. One thing goes wrong, whether it's because of the officials or whether it's because of some dumb play they did, a ill-timed timeout by Nagy, questionable play call. One thing goes wrong – and that's it. Yeah, like they get a small nosebleed and they end up dying from bleeding out. Like they can't even figure out how to stop their own bleeding, and it is sad. So let's try to end on a brighter note. Now that I painted that morbid picture with Sunday sweetness, this season I've been finding that on my little note sheet, I'm either I have one word that hasn't really moved at all on my note sheet, and that one word is the word Khalil. And I'm either putting Herbert or Mac at the end of my notes there. And this week I have Herbert there. Mac played well as well, but Herbert had, I think it was 97 rushing yards, just under 100. I wish they would have just kept going to him more. They seemed to abandon the run a little early at one, and that just spells doom for Nagy's offense as it's currently constructed. But Herbert, I really do think he's the real deal. And all the people, I love all the people who on Twitter who are like, oh, I told you so, when it comes to paying running backs. Like, this year when you see someone like Khalil Herbert, and then you see the fact that, like, CMC and Saquon are down and injured and out, and they're the ones with the big contracts, it's like, yeah, it is kind of an interesting thing. And yeah, you probably shouldn't pay running backs. What will they do with Montgomery? We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, Herbert, he's looked great. He looks, I'm really excited about what he can be for the Bears. Maybe he'll never be a true RB1, but even if his role is just an RB2, he looks like he'll be quite capable of either role. So Khalil Herbert's my Sunday sweetness.
Yep. I'm giving my Sunday sweetness. It's going to sound, it's more of a philosophy, that what we started with earlier on this episode, the end zone target for Marquise Goodwin on the Bears' first offensive drive. Like, it was, it's not really a Sunday sweetness.
Modern NFL offense.
I think it's to Fields. It's to Bill Lazor. It's to whoever. It could be to Nagy if he dialed that play up, which I don't know. But, like, this is what we need to be doing so much more of. And I sat there at Soldier Field on that play and just saw the potential. Like, to end this on a more positive note, I saw the downfield accuracy of Fields, and it showed that the Packers were respecting it and they were scared. Like, that wasn't a 50-50 call that could have gone either way. That was a blatant defensive pass interference. They were concerned that they were giving up the touchdown, and they wanted to give themselves a chance to get the stop. So that's going to be mine. And to end on an overall more positive note, Like, that's the number one priority is still Justin Fields. This season was never like that. Is that like I'll take two losses to the Packers this year if it means we're get, like that Justin Fields is getting to develop right now and not delaying it. And we should be, he's giving a lot to be encouraged by what we're seeing on and off the field, seeing Mooney and Roquan and Fields like at the Sky game together. There's a, he's, I know that Justin's close with Jalen Johnson and Khalil Herbert. Even like Cole Kmet getting involved on the field this past week, had a couple of nice plays. There's a young core of Bears players that will continue to grow and build chemistry and give us reason to be hopeful and invested. And if that's the direction of the team, we can get behind that. I think like that's a fun product that we can all enjoy our weekends watching for years to come. And let's just build on that. So I'm excited about those things.
I 100% agree. I love Fields. I don't really think he showed any signs of regression of any sort. He still showed some signs of things he needs to work on, things he needs to learn. But my favorite play from him on Sunday was actually a play he was sacked on. But it was a play where he got knocked over and he caught himself with his hand. And then his knee did touch, or his elbow touched the ground, which is why it was the sack. But he got up out of the tackle. He broke the tackle, even though his elbow touched the ground, making it the sack. And he got up and he's running out to the right, and the whistle's just blowing and blowing, and the play's over. But he does not want that play to end, and he chucks the ball down the field in desperation, almost as if to say, like, they didn't notice that I'm down. They didn't notice I'm down. And I just love that because it's, I don't know if in that split moment he knew he had been sacked or not, and if he was just trying to sell it or if he was actually just kept playing. But the like, how many times would we have seen that from Bears quarterbacks in the past that, oh, my elbow touched, I'm done, this play's over? Like, the fact that
it's a mindset. It's a competitive mindset. Like, he's a stone-cold killer competitor, and, like, that's what this is.
I 100% agree, and I think the important thing we all need to remember is that everything he does right now is something he's learning and something he can build upon. And the hope should be that because there's so many struggles right now that he's working through, that by the end of the season, we should really see some very complete games by Justin Fields. And I think you're going to see that. I think the bye week this year after the Niners game is going to be very instrumental and instructive for Justin Fields. And I think that first game back at Soldier Field against the Ravens after the bye week will be very interesting to see what he looks like. He should be, in theory, more prepared than we've seen him to this point. And so I really look forward to that week, as maybe I think most people will have the Ravens favorited for that game, assuming everybody's healthy. But I would look to that game maybe as one that Field starts to really raise some eyebrows around the league. So I'm excited about it. I know you're excited about it. And I'm very proud of ourselves that we were able to turn this into a positive ending here, because it was kind of a down in the doldrums podcast. But
it was a good therapy session. I needed it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I could provide that for you here. But this episode is over. And just remember to follow me, FuriousGeorge94, for game analysis, snarky humor, and wild opinions regarding your Chicago Bears. Random Twitter follow recommendation, by the way. If you do not follow Cam Ellis, who writes for the Bears for 670 The Score, I love Cam Ellis because, one, he interacts with other Twitter users quite a bit, including myself at times, but also he is very, very snarky. He never takes anything the Bears do seriously, which is great because football is entertainment. So if you want a more lighthearted and very sarcastic take on the Bears, definitely follow Cam Ellis on Twitter. So just random recommendation there. But with that, it's time for us to go. So please be great, be kind, bear down, and we'll see you next time.
go, baby. Fade to black.
Been the Full Press Bears Podcast. If you don't love the Bears, we don't love you.